Welcome to the PMFA Best Practice Operations Webinar. I am Joel Smith, and I'll be hosting this call every fourth Monday of each month at 11 a.m. Central Time. And it'll last approximately 45 minutes to an hour. It's also available, if you're just calling into the phone conferencing, it's also available at a videocast and PowerPoint if you go to freeconferencecall.com/JoelSmith123. And then the online meeting ID is JoelSmith123. Consequently, the 123 is my birthday, so if anybody wants to remember that, just saying. The purpose of our call is to help owners work on our business and not just in it by leveraging our talents, priorities, and our opportunities. Second is to share systems and strategies that drive profitability so we can not only survive but also thrive in this business. I've mentioned it before, but Papa Murphy's International is not going to solve all of our problems. So this is part of the reason we do this. Owners helping others, or owners helping owners. It's a way for us to come together and really try to help each other. And then the third item to our purpose is to have a place where franchisees, multi-unit leaders, and general managers can connect to learn and share best practices, ask questions, and be supported. So that's our purpose. That's why we're here, having a vision of your desired outcome. In February, we talked about planning first and producing second, the importance of having a plan and knowing what you're doing. And then last month in March, we talked about the rules for back-of-house production, and there were a lot of practical tools in there. Hopefully some of you have maybe taken some of those back to your stores and implemented them and gotten started with that. So today, in April, we're talking about the rules for the front-of-house performance. So that's pretty important and oftentimes overlooked and not concentrated on nearly as much as we need to. So we'll get started here. First of all, it's really hard to get and keep customers. It doesn't just happen magically. It's not just because Papa Murphy's creates these wonderful commercials that everybody will just watch or listen to and just, you know, like a zombie, just navigate directly towards our stores. In order for us to get and keep our customers, it really depends on performance. You know, customers give us money. When we perform at a high level, they give us more money. And when we perform at a low level, they give us less money. So that puts the onus on us to really execute well and to operate at a high level. So that's what we're going to talk about today, particularly focus on our rush time area. So when we perform at a less than high level, it's usually due to the following reasons. Number one, and I believe that this is the number one reason, but lack of leadership. Also, a lack of purpose. Maybe your organization just comes to work and just goes to work and gets after it. Maybe your purpose is just to make money, and it doesn't necessarily translate down to your crew very well. Lack of intentional planning. So some people are better planners than others. Some people live their lives more intentionally than others, and so that's going to translate into high performance or low performance, depending on your skill level there. Lack of communication, same thing. Some people are really good at communicating. Some people really struggle at communicating. So this is another factor we're going to talk about today that's really important. And then a lack of staff. Some of us don't perform well because we just don't have staff to perform well. So that's a whole different problem. We'll talk about that a little bit, but that's a different presentation for a different day. We can talk about staffing and recruiting and training on a different day. Today, I do want to make this more about what do we do with the staff that we have? How can we perform at the highest level with what we do have? And so assuming we've got adequate staff, what do we do next? Today's objective, we're going to is to highlight the importance of training and empowering people to be responsible for navigating the performance of the team. So two key words in there is empowering and responsible or responsibility. Also, to give us a few guardrails to teach our leaders to have a better pre-rush and rush time awareness, to illustrate the importance of communication and communicating individual goals and responsibilities that lead to people performing at their best, and to help your team members understand the concept of partnering for performance, or synergy is another word for it, that leads to harmonized performance. So we'll just get started here. Also, just this is just a little bit of self-promotion, by the way, but if you're interested in reading a blog that I wrote titled Five Things Shift Leaders Lead, feel free to go out to ParetoPage.com, and I've got a blog out there. I've got a lot of interesting stuff that I've written. And this blog, Five Things Shift Leaders Need, goes matches up just really nicely with this presentation. It's not the same thing, but it matches up nicely. So if you really want to get some ideas on what we can do better for our shift leaders, go read that blog. So let's keep going here. Zig Ziglar said, you don't build a business, you build people, and then people build the business. And I think that's true. People need to be the foundation of our business. And when I say people are the foundation of our business, I'm not just saying just having the right people. I'm saying having the right people and having those people empowered and equipped to do a great job. You can have the right people and not train them, and they're not going to necessarily perform at a high level. But if you have the wrong people, they're really not going to perform at a high level, regardless of your level of leadership. So there's a little equation. The right people plus the right leadership equals the right success. So if you have either one of those lacking, you're going to struggle. Jim Collins, in his book, Good to Great, wrote, first find the right people on the bus and then get them in the right seat. And I think that's important. And when we talk about our performance in the evening time, rush time for Papa Murphy's, I find that we miss the boat a lot of times on this. We'll have the wrong people in the wrong, we'll have the wrong people on the bus, or we'll have the wrong people in the wrong seats. You know, we might have somebody running a shift that really shouldn't be running a shift, or we might have somebody on the register that, you know, doesn't have the best customer service skills or whatever it might be. And so finding the right people is most important, but getting them in the right seat is important as well. Every time we take our focus off of recruiting and hiring, we essentially are settling for what we have instead of working to improve. It's not unusual to see a store manager get to the level that they feel they need in order to operate their store, however many employees that is, 9 or 10 or whatever it is, and then kind of just take some time off from staffing. That's a bad idea. I think we should always be hiring, and we should always be looking to replace the bottom rung. In most stores, there's always a couple people at the bottom rung of the totem pole that's acting as if they don't want to work there. And so we need to be thinking ahead and staffing for next month instead of next week. So that's one of the things that I see is we fall behind because we just don't keep the pedal to the metal and continue trying to find the right people. Once we have the right people, don't put or keep them in the wrong position. That's another thing too. Don't settle for a warm body when only a leader will do. This is a common mistake in the restaurant industry. We'll fill a position and we'll just assume it's filled. Well, we have to fill it with the right kind of person, a person that's competent and capable and has the capacity to do what you're asking them to do at a high level. There's plenty of people that can do it at a low level, but that's not what we want. We need to find people that will do it at a high level. So don't just get comfortable with somebody just because you like them or just because you don't want to get on the hiring bandwagon or whatever it is. So those are a couple tips to begin with. So rule number one is empowerment. Okay, what is empowerment? Empowerment is the process of unleashing power in people, their knowledge, experience, and motivations, and focusing that power to achieve positive outcomes for the organization. Okay, that's Ken Blanchard's definition. He's got a great book, by the way, and it's called Leading at a Higher Level. I would recommend that you read it. It's an awesome book. So empowerment is not just simply giving somebody authority. That's not empowerment, although sometimes people think that empowerment is just giving somebody the access rights to be able to tell other people what to do or putting somebody else in charge or just heaping responsibility on them. Empowerment has more to do with helping other people become who they're supposed to be. Helping people change from the inside out to realize what their capabilities are, what their skills are, what their potential is, and to ignite something in them so that they can become everything that they can be. That's quite different than in a hierarchical structure where the job is just to do what you're told. Okay, so this is different. Empowerment is a whole different kind of structure. It's bringing the best out of everyone. Empowerment. There needs to be accountability. There needs to be a person in charge for every shift. I see this being violated a lot. There needs to be a person in charge for every shift. So when I say a person in charge, I just mean one person in charge. Okay, that's really important. A lot of times it's not uncommon to see your night crew go up front. There'll be three or four people working or whatever, and everybody just kind of starts working and doing what they do without really any type of communication. And a lot of times it's because the manager just kind of assumes, well, they know what they're doing. They're veterans. They're just going to do what they did last week, and they're going to do what they do every week, and they're very competent. And sometimes we think that by being passive, it's showing trust to them. Like, hey, I'm not gonna harp on you and tell you what to do today because I know you guys know what you're doing. That's a bad way of thinking, because people need to be refreshed. People need to hear things over and over and over, and just leaving things and leaving people to wherever they're at isn't a good idea, and it doesn't last for long. It's like a flashlight. If you just leave it on and let it go, that light is going to begin to flicker at some point, and it's going to go out. And it's our job as a leader to when we empower people to give them energy and to keep them shining as bright as they can. So we can't do that if we just allow things to happen. When we have a person in charge of a shift, we need to make sure that their focus is on responsibility and not authority. You know, a lot of people that aren't familiar with an empowerment model of leadership, and you know, that kind of grew up with a hierarchical model of leadership, they're not going to know what that means. They're not going to know the difference between responsibility and authority. So they might just think, well, I'm the boss now. So it's, you know, I've seen it before where, you know, a 18, 19-year-old shift leader just all of a sudden starts telling everybody else what to do and kind of takes it easy. That happens far more than what we would like for it to happen. We need to pass the baton. At shift change, we need to allow the person in charge to take the lead. There may be multi-managers working. You may have another assistant manager or the general manager's working, or even the owner's there, whatever the case is. But we need to avoid having multiple people running the shift. There needs to be one person running the shift. Too many chiefs will cause confusion. And, you know, what they say, if the job is everyone's, it's no one's. So we need to take responsibility, and we need to put one person in charge so that they're the ones that is in charge for the shift. And, of course, they need to be trained in order to be able to do that. If you're the owner or a general manager and you're putting an assistant manager or a shift leader in charge of your shift, we need to be able to put ourselves under their authority. And that takes a little bit of humility. It takes a little bit of maybe biting our tongue a little bit and allowing them some freedom to maybe make some mistakes, but also just to prove that they can do it. We need to be an example, and we need to support people, but we also need to just let them know that they are the ones that are in charge and you trust them. So that's kind of the first stages to empowerment. Okay, rule number two is awareness. Okay, the environment is everything that isn't me. Albert Einstein said that. So it's awareness is tricky sometimes because it's so easy for people, particularly if they're in a new job or a new position. It's so easy to be self-conscious. And when we become self-conscious, we're worried about what other people think of us. We're worried about what's going on, and we feel insecure. And sometimes we can get in our own head. And that's really dangerous for people in charge or people learning leadership to spend that time in their head being worried and wondering what's going on, what other people are thinking, when our awareness needs to be outside of ourselves and focus on our stores, on our other people, and so on. I teach my people that we need to be in charge of what we need to be aware of, everything that's going on in our store before the rush, during the rush, and after the rush. I teach my people that we need to put our eyeballs on every part of the store so that we just know what's going on. It sounds a little tricky, and it is. It's not easy at all, but if you have the perspective that I need to have my eyes everywhere so that I know what's going on and I need to have an awareness going on, you're going to develop a way to be able to do that, to be more effective and to be more aware. And it's really important that if you're going to have command over your crew and you're going to be the person in charge of a rush, you just really need to know that. So here are what I call the four P's of awareness. And this will give you an idea of what I'm talking about, what we need to be aware of. So the first P is people. We need to know who's working. Do we have the right number of people to meet the needs of the customer? Do we have the right complementary skills? That's important. That starts with the schedule, of course, but we also need to be aware on a shift level. So if you have a person in charge, it's their job to find that out. They need to come in and really know what's going on. And it helps if they can look it over and know what's going on earlier in the week or prior to that shift so that they can feel comfortable walking in, that they're coming into a right position with the right people and so on. The second P is product. Do we know and have the proper level of products? Is there a pre-rush system in place to ensure that we're locked and loaded? Our company, and I've mentioned this before, and again, this is a shameless plug, but we have a red book that we use that it's kind of our baton that we hand off, and our night crew uses this this red book to answer these questions. We do pre-rush. We have a pre-rush checklist. We do pre-rush counts so that person in charge in the evening can rest assured that we have enough cheesy breads, that we have enough of each kind of crust, and that we have the right people in place and so on and so forth. We have to make sure that we have the right product, and sometimes it's hard to know that. And when you have new people starting off, they're just not going to know what the right amount of product is, so they may need your help with that. You may need to step in and say, okay, so your counts show that you have 14 cheesy breads. Okay, that's all right, but we're working on add-on sales now, so we're going to need to bump this up a little bit. On Friday and Saturday, we need 25 or 30 cheesy breads so we can start to kind of fill in those blanks in their head so they know what's going on. That's just communication can help with that. Okay, so the third P is to have a plan. So we have to answer, so the question is, so do we have a well-developed plan for our team? And are we talking about individual responsibilities for the evening and team responsibilities for the evening? Those are important. Have we thought through possible scenarios that could happen? That's important too. There's a lot of things that can happen through the course of the rush. And we need to have some type of anticipation of what could happen. If we're just kind of running through the forest looking at our toes and sprinting, we're going to run into some trees if we're not looking out in front of us, ahead of us. And so we need to teach our people in charge to be able to do that. For instance, maybe with labor control, you could teach people to have a plan of action of who's going to go home first and what do they need to have done before they go home if we're slow. Or a plan of action of what happens if we get a little bit busier than normal. Do we have kind of a mutual understanding of somebody that's going to stick around? Do they know that? And are they prepared for that? Or are we going to surprise them at the end of the night and say, oh, by the way, can you stick around? You know, so it's good to communicate those things ahead of time and to have a plan in place. And then the fourth P is procedures. Are we following the systems and procedures established, or are we just kind of going up front and winging it? You know, some of the procedures and standards would be, of course, you know, our portion charts. You know, are we weighing and measuring correctly? Are we stretching correctly? Are we speaking to the customers correctly? Are we suggested selling the way we're supposed to? Do we have pre-makes, you know, according to the system that we have a pre-make chart or a prep list that we're using to build up so that we know what's going on? So those procedures are really important too. So for the awareness stage, the four P's are people, product, plan, and procedures. So we need to be aware of all of those things if we're going to be successful. And that really is a problem. Sometimes we don't even have a person in charge. We just have workers that are just kind of working simultaneously and there's really nobody in charge. I've seen that before. I don't think that happens a lot, but it happens more than what we think. Out of the 7 days and those 21 hours per night per rush, those 21 hours during our biggest shift, I'm worried that we don't have a full 21 hours of a person in charge. I'm worried that sometimes maybe the general manager goes home at 6 or 6:30, so there's some time where we don't have the right people in charge and that kind of thing. Or from 7 o'clock on till close, that there's just a couple of closers working and there's not somebody in charge. So those are some of the fears and worries that we need to think about and work through. Okay, rule number three is communication. Clay Shirky says, information sharing produces shared awareness among the participants, but collective action creates shared responsibility by tying the user's identity to the identity of the group. I think that's important. That's where teamwork comes from, and responsibility is the key here. So if we've made a plan of action and we're communicating that plan of action, it doesn't do any good if we don't share that plan of action. You know, it's not enough for a person in charge to have the awareness and people and product and plan and procedures if they don't communicate it down to the team level. You know, our team needs to be on the same page, and we need to actually share responsibility. When we don't communicate, we don't share responsibility. When we don't communicate, all the responsibility falls on whoever it is that's in charge. And if we don't communicate to the crew and share responsibility, and if we don't have a person in charge and share that responsibility with that person in charge, then it falls on you. Leadership is all about sharing and distributing your tasks and your responsibility to other people so that other people can be empowered and operate and have a full functioning crew. There's kind of a concept that I've read about. It's kind of interesting. Everybody can be categorized into one of four different categories, employees. The first is an adder. This would be like when the person in charge or the manager or the leader has a little bit more on their plate than they need, so they just add somebody else to the mix to kind of take care of the overflow. And so that would be an adder. A subtractor would be somebody that comes on board and they're supposed to take care of the overflow, but they're not capable of it, so they actually make things worse. They get in the way and they underproduce and cost us more money. And so that's a subtractor. And then the third one would be a divider. And a divider would be somebody that not only comes in and isn't really very productive and doesn't really help us too much, but they actually divide. They might create bad habits for other people and make our whole company worse. Those people need to go. We can't keep them around. But then the fourth one is a multiplier. And this is where we need to hone in on. If you're going to have a general manager or any leader in your store, in your company, we need to be multipliers. And a multiplier doesn't just simply add to the crew. When they have more on their plate, they add to it. A multiplier actually takes their leadership and they create another version of themselves by training and empowering other people. And that's what a multiplier does. That's what we need to do as owners and as general managers with our shift leaders. We need to multiply ourselves. If we're great at running a shift in the evening, we don't want to just add somebody to the evening so that we don't have to be there. We want to multiply ourselves in the evening so they're doing what we do, so they have the same attitude that we have. And in order to do that, we've really got to take some steps to be intentional. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of the communication that we need that needs to take place in the evening in order to perform at a high level. So first of all, I like to teach people that we need to talk our people into, through, and out of position. I learned that like 30 years ago when I was working for a different restaurant system, and I think they called it TTM, Talk to Me. It was all about the needs of the employee, what we need. And employees can't always necessarily tell you what they need, but what they really need is they need to know what to expect going into a rush. They need to know how they're doing, and they also need to know how they perform. So talking people into position, through position, and out of position is really important. And if you skip that process, well, you kind of deserve what you're going to get. So how do we do that? So first of all, we need to communicate the vision for the evening. Start with the end in mind. That might look as simple as saying, hey, John, we're going to do about 120 pizzas today according to our forecasting. So it's rainy outside, so that might turn into 130 or 40, so we really need to be on our game today. So make sure you're communicating to people and doing what you need to do. So maybe you're just starting with the overall vision. We also need to make sure that station assignments need to be assigned and clearly communicated to people. We need to decide who can move and who needs to stand in a box. In our company, I teach, if we have a Friday night, a busy Friday night, we've got 6 or 7 people working. I like to take both of our main register operators and our sauce and cheeser and tell them that they're standing in a box or a milk crate and they can't go anywhere. So they're statues, and they can't just go get things whenever they want. They need to kind of be where they're at. This really helps to keep the crew from being kind of crazy and everybody going everywhere. And so figure that out. Figure out who's going to be in the box and who's free to roam. Tasks need to be assigned for efficiency. Who's going to fill up the grab and go? Who's going to pull out proofed crust? Who's going to be in charge of the cooler? Who's going to, fill up the make line and stock the make line coming out of the rush or during the rush? Glass, floors, dishes. We need to make use of a runner as well. So there's a lot of different things that we can communicate, but we need to actually do that. We need to communicate with our people and let them know what their jobs are. So a few ideas. Maybe walk-in register, you've assigned that to Mary, and so you talk her into position. You let her know that, hey, after the rush, your job is to take care of the glass, and throughout the rush, you need to make sure that the grab-and-go is full, and by the way, you are standing in a box. And then maybe come up with a goal for add-on sales, maybe 50%. Say, hey, look, Mary, I'd really like for you to really push for 50% on your add-on sales today. Last week, you were at 45%, so let's see if we can do a little bit more. Maybe give them a couple tips on something that they can do to focus on. Call-in register, same thing. Maybe you got Clark on the phone, call-in register, and so you talk him into position, you let him know, we're going to focus on your organization of your call-in tickets, and you're standing in a box, you can't go anywhere. Let's really work on your cash accuracy, because last night you were off, $6 on your register. I think that probably could have been avoided, so let's really work on that, and that's what I'm going to ask you about later on. Sauce and cheese are the same thing, crust and ticket organization, and maybe they deal with a little bit of sloppiness, so you give them a goal with no mistakes and be neat. Same thing, you apply a couple people to be on the phones and to be pizza makers, and maybe you apply you have a runner that's their job is to get everything for everyone from the cooler. I like to do that. I like to assign access rights to the cooler to one person. So if you've got maybe a runner, maybe that's your back make line person, and he's your runner, he might get a little bit tired of everybody, saying, hey, run back and grab me this, or I need this. And so he runs back, and he's the one guy that's going back and forth between the cooler. It can become chaos during a Friday night rush or any busy night when you got 6 employees and all 6 people are running to the cooler for whatever they need. That can be chaos. We really can work a lot more efficient if we just assign tasks, put people in a box, and give access rights to the cooler and assign tasks so that everybody knows how to stay busy when we get our downtimes and who to communicate for what they need. So those are important. Some more thoughts on communication. We need to communicate specials, speed goals, add-on percentage, of course, KDS goals. We need to communicate the why and the purpose of what we're doing. That's important. When we explain to somebody a procedure of why we stretch out the crust, it's important to let us know or to let them know why we do that. If we're talking people into position and we're giving them specific goals, we need to tell them why they need to perform at this and how that affects the big picture, how that affects everyone else on the team and how that affects the customers and so on and so forth. We need to communicate the what-if scenarios. you know, what if this new person is slower than we thought? What do we do? Well, maybe we pull them out of that position and put them on topping cheese or something, whatever it might be. So ask yourself and anticipate some of those issues that might take place and communicate those down to the crew level. That's important. And we also need to keep the culture fun and focused, and we need to communicate that. You know, there's some people that just really have a gift to that. I've been able to see people that just are great at that. We had a guy in our anchoring store years ago that, man, he would just have all the little kids in the store that would come in, and he would just have them laughing and gleaming, and they would all be wanting to come back to see this guy. And he just made it fun. He would, you know, give them stickers and different things, and that kind of became contagious, and the rest of the crew kind of, you know, caught on to that too. So, you know, high fives all around and different things to make it fun, contests. That's up to the leader and the person in charge to kind of take initiative of and really make happen. So rule number three was communication. Rule number four is synergy. Synergy is basically partnering for performance. Once you've established the captain and everyone has been made aware of the plan, it's time to execute the plan. And this is where the rubber meets the road. Not only do we have to have these things planned out well and communicated well, but now it's time to really get after it and make it happen. So, you know, synergy doesn't happen overnight. You don't get a bunch of new people, put them together, and just automatically going to have synergy. It does take time, and it takes a daily focus to build it up. And so that's important. We need to have our aces at our places. Synergy doesn't happen when you have the wrong people in the wrong places either. So optimize your station assignments based on skill set and experience, and that'll help a lot with your synergy. Synergy requires trust also. Every team member needs to understand that we are interdependent. We're interdependent, meaning we rely on each other. And if one of the people falls down and doesn't perform what they need to do, it affects everybody else. Everybody else has to then step up more, and then you begin to have ill will going on in the crew. So helping everybody to understand their responsibility and their lane, you know, and how they can not only stay in their lane, but they can make sure everything in their lane is completed. They clean up after themselves. They do the things that they need to do to keep from piling on somebody else. So synergy is really important for that. Synergy, there's a quote by Mark Twain. Synergy, the bonus that is achieved when things work together harmoniously. Harmoniously is really key. You know, I kind of think of like a band director or an orchestra director that's really kind of making things all work together. And a person in charge can do that. You know, they have the ability to really make sure everybody's working together, but you can't do that without communicating, having that plan, and working in that way, being a great example of synergy. Let's see. So accountability, we're all accountable to each other. A high-efficiency team is self-monitoring and puts team goals and results first. That's important. That's really important to have synergy. Everybody needs to be going in the same direction, and there needs to be accountability. I remember years ago I had a store that wasn't operating very well, and it was a little slower store, and I had this gentleman, I think he was an assistant manager or something, he wasn't trained very well, so we brought him up to another store that was a busier store to work on a Friday night. He'd been trained, so he wasn't thrown into anything. And he got thrown into this other store that had run really well. And he started not weighing and measuring right in the middle of a Friday night on the make line. He wasn't weighing and measuring very well. And I remember watching this, kind of observing this, but one of the crew members standing next to him looked at him and said, "Hey, we don't do that here. No, we're going to weigh and measure everything." This was not a manager. This was just a crew person that looked at that guy and said, "Hey, look, you know what? If you're going to work on our store, you got to weigh and measure. This is what we all do." That's synergy. This is when everybody's working together. And if you have a cog in the wheel that comes in that's not synergistic or not helping us get to where we need to be, that person doesn't fit. So we need to bring that person into the fold and help them become like a synergistic crew. So that's important. We need to teach the little tricks of the trade, pre-measuring product for people, you know, get the cups going, that kind of thing. And coordinate trips to the cooler, bump and slide, flock to the customer, that kind of thing that creates a synergistic approach towards leadership. So those are the four rules to the front of house production or performance, and I hope these are helpful for you. In just a couple minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines, but before I do that, I do want to mention something real quick. So I was speaking with Mickey Waters. Some of you know Mickey. A few days ago, and we were discussing, maybe some future plans of what we could do to make this PMFA best practices training thing a little bit better. And one of the things that we talked about were some of the needs that are out there. And we know that we need better training for multi-unit leaders and area supervisors, that kind of thing. But we also need better training and more advanced training for new owners as well, new owners or inexperienced owners, or maybe owners that are just becoming multi-unit owners as well. And so we were brainstorming a little bit. And Mickey used to work for PMI Corporate years ago, and I don't know how long ago. And so she was in charge. One of the things that she did was she taught the five-star playbook. And we got to talking about that, and I was really impressed by the system, the five-star playbook, and the way that Mickey was describing it. And so we are thinking that this might be a good opportunity going forward at some point, whether it be during this phone call or maybe starting a second phone call, maybe the second week of each month. But to maybe go through a five-month training process where we go through the five levels of the five-star playbook. But I would really like to get your feedback on this. So I'm going to have Mickey give you a quick 3 or 4, 5 minute introduction of what her thoughts are on this. But if you do have an interest in this and using this as a tool to train your multi-unit operators, or if you yourself would like to be part of this, please shoot me an email. I'd love to hear your feedback. My email address is joelsmith123@yahoo.com. And so we can't do this if we don't know what the needs are. So with that, I would like to ask Mickey maybe to hit star 6 and jump on the call here, and if you can, and give them an idea of your thoughts on the five-star playbook.
Well, are you able to hear me now?
I can hear you great.
As old joke goes? Okay, well, great. Well, thank you for the time the other day. It was nice to chat with you about what some of the needs were. When the company rolled out the five-star playbook, it simply was a way to help stores, maybe who had new managers, maybe who had managers that hadn't completed training yet, or brand new owners, excel and trying to meet the goals for five-star status within the system. And over the years, what I found was that I didn't use the book as much to reach five-star status as I did to reach better status, whether it be in my people, serving my customers, building sales, improving profitability. And when I was with the company, the first thing we did in my team to roll the book out was to have monthly calls, like you mentioned, and to open it up to store managers, area supervisors, any owner that wanted to participate, and take it one level at a time. So the book is designed to use just a little bit of, or to take it all the way up to working through profitability after several months of using the book. Every single store within the system was given a book. Now, in some cases, in my team, we took the book actually to the store or took it to a DMA meeting, tried to introduce it to owners there or to area supervisors. Some folks just took it to owners. And I know, Joel, you had mentioned that you had a number of the books. There may be stores out there that don't even have the books. And I'd be happy to see if we can't find some. I'm sure there's some sitting around down in the bottom of the PMI office someplace. So the playbook itself is designed to be used, like I said, a little bit at a time or all of it. It has a really great part in the very back of the book for when you move a manager to a new store. It's called the transition plan, so that they can evaluate what's going on in that store and what to focus on first. And then also the last section of the book is if you're doing a new store opening and you're a manager, an area supervisor, new owner, and it kind of goes along with the website that helps you do the checklist for new store opening. So that's what I've got.
Excellent. Thank you, Mickey. I appreciate that. And I'll throw this in, too. I've been looking over this playbook a little bit. I have to admit I wasn't very familiar with it until I spoke with Mickey about it. But I'm looking it over, and it's really interesting. It kind of focuses on four specific areas and then at different levels within those areas. For instance, there's a level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, and level 5 for each one of these four areas. And these areas are, the first one is people, the second is customers, and then sales, and the fourth category is profits. And so each one of those areas has five different levels that become a little bit more advanced as you go up. And so looking through this, it's pretty wide, and the coverage is great. It looks like it covers pretty much just about most everything you need for leadership and for really running your store well. So I do like that. So please shoot me an email, or maybe mention, once we start this question and answers here in a second discussion time, please mention and bring it up. So with that, let's go ahead and open it up. I'm going to I'm going to leave it in the muted mode, so if you'd like to speak, go ahead and just hit star 6. And feel free to talk about the front of house that we're the presentation I just did, or let's talk, or feel free to talk about the 5-star playbook potential as well. So I'll go ahead and open it up. So,
hey, this is Jefferson.
Go ahead.
Hey, I'm a tier owner, multi owner, and I'm interested in the playbook program that you talk about. I think that would really help me because I have a new manager, I'm a new owner, and plus multi store owner. I would look forward to that program if you guys are interested in. I'll definitely support it.
Okay. Excellent. Thanks.
Joel, it's Mickey again. Concerning today's presentation, the one thing I'd like to add to the section on empowering and giving the responsibilities is making sure that when the weekly schedule is being put together, that those people that you plan on empowering are scheduled at the right time. You mentioned you use the Red Book. Some teams still use a version of the Green Book, and you know everybody's got their own version. But if you schedule that person who's going to be in charge to not come in until 4:30, the time you've lost the time to get prepared for it. So there has to be some empowerment either by somebody who's available and there earlier in the day, or just scheduling those aces in their places at the right time also.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think when we schedule people, even at 4 o'clock, and that's the person that's a person in charge, you know, if it's in the summer and we're slow, maybe that's okay. But on busier times, 4 o'clock probably isn't going to give you enough time to walk around the store and take product counts and make sure that things are happening and talking people into position and all that. So that's a good point.
Yeah, I love your access rights to the walk-in also, because people will gravitate to the sink and they will gravitate to the walk-in, and you could be working the cash register and realize there's nobody on the make line.
Right. That works really well, and it kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, the three people standing in a box. When you got a bigger crew, obviously you can't do that if you have three people working, but if you've got a full crew on a Friday night and you have those three positions and just put them in a box where they can't go anywhere, That works really well. I would recommend that you give that a shot because it's amazing what happens when you have these pillars stand in place. Especially your sauce and cheeser. When you have a kind of a crazy sauce and cheeser that's moving all around, that kind of throws a wrench at everything.
So a question for you, since you're talking about a walk-in, this is a Jasmine thing, California.
Mm-hmm.
Does PMI or your organization, do they have a template? We're going to remodel a store because I am running into the problem where people are, walking. And to get a walk-in, they're running into each other a lot.
Yeah, I think that goes right along with your station assignments, you know, and just communicating it and just putting some guardrails and some limitations in place so that people have limits. They can't go beyond this area. And it goes right along with having a runner, too. So If you don't have everybody going to the cooler, you got to have somebody going to the cooler, you know, because you got to get things from time to time. But the template that we use would be just kind of going right along with the station assignments and the task assignments. But you've got to change the culture. You know, if there's a little bit of a chaos culture going on where everybody just kind of goes everywhere, you've got to get that buy-in from everybody. You've got to introduce a new idea, try it, get the buy-in. And once they do this, it's amazing the eyes that'll open and they'll realize, wow, this is so much more organized than it was last week or whatever the case is. So I think part of it is just getting going, having these limitations and these guardrails in place, and put them in place, explain it, get the buy-in, and I think you'll start to see progress. It probably won't be great for the first couple, 2 or 3 weeks when you try it, but once you start going, you'll find that synergy starts to take place, and then they'll start to adhere to that.
So question for you, if nobody else is pending, I don't want to be that guy.
Sure.
So the biggest concern I have at our store, because I bought it 2 years ago, is people, they don't stock the make line. They always, they're the norm in that store's been, they go to a walk-in a lot. And when I stocked the make line, they didn't like it. And they only like to run one make line rather than two.
Oh, geez. Well, yeah, that's interesting. I think when people understand the advantage of the fewer trips to the cooler, the better. They'll start to get that. We have something with our make lines and that we did, and some of our stores do this better than others. But years ago, we kind of started what we called a 3-minute make line, And it's something that we would do maybe in the middle of a rush if we get kind of a slow period real quick. We got a few minutes when we're between customers, and we try to overhaul the entire make line in 3 minutes. So we do this by assigning. One person takes one half of it, the other person takes the other half, and they flip pans on the top real quick or fill them up, whatever they need, and then another person is in charge of making a list and filling up the make line. We try to get it done in 3 minutes. So it's kind of like a pit crew in NASCAR. We try to do it as a full team and get it done quickly. And it's amazing when you do that, how that can train your crew to think that way, to think quickly and to think as a team with that synergy. And when they have that make line full underneath them too, they can see the advantage of that as you go along. So, you know, you can be creative and think of different things like that can make it kind of fun as well. So I'm not 100% sure how to tell you to, you know, how to get people to buy into having the make line stocked, but I think once they see the advantage of it, once they see the advantages of it, they'll and if you assign it, make sure it's done before people go home.
I tried it, and especially on our busy day, and it didn't work well because they were still even I told them, hey, it's all underneath, don't go in the walk-in. They were still going back and forth. It didn't. And then another thing is, do you see a cost saving in running only one make line versus two, even on a slow day? So that way you don't have all your specialty pizza on the one. And that's something I was wondering.
I would recommend always using as many make lines as you have. It's just convenience, and it's not really about you know, cost or anything. It's really about convenience for the customer. If a customer sees that you have a make line closed, they might get the idea that you're not running on all cylinders. And intentionally. And so, but if they see that your make lines are open, even if you've got three people working or whatever, and you've got that other make line going, you can be creative. You can save more time. Like you said, you can have your specials going on that back make line or whatever the case is, and it keeps you from having to reach underneath to grab other pans of whatever you need. So I would recommend that you run your make lines all the time. And even your back make line, I would recommend that you don't allow anybody to close it down until 7 o'clock. You know, sometimes they'll try to cheat and they'll do it earlier than that, but if you monitor that and let them keep it open until 7 o'clock, maybe close it down at 7 o'clock and they can go with the other make lines for the rest of the night. But I would recommend you keep it open. I don't think you can go wrong with that.
If nobody has a question, I have another question.
Sure.
My manager has been there 18 years, and I did that. I opened the back. I went myself, and I set the make line like we have. We have other store that's more dialed. And he didn't like it. He I cannot get a buy-in from him. He had a certain way he set up, which in my opinion doesn't work really well, because he'll put red sauce in both make line. And to me, is you want to have a specialty on one make line and your red sauce other way. People are not running into each other, and you just move the tag. And the issue, we kept losing tags. It didn't work well. So I said, all right, go back to your norm until we figure out how to resolve this issue.
Right. Yeah, that could be a tough situation. I assume that you inherited this person.
Correct. Yeah. So I inherited him, and when he was he's a 60-year vet there, and I inherited him 2 years ago. So
gotcha.
That's my struggle. I want him to more manage, not wash dishes. So he'll. I feel like he's stuck at. He feels like he has to do everything. So I'm like, you delegate.
Right.
You don't. You're a manager. You have to delegate. You're a facilitator, not a. You know.
Right.
Get there. You gotta fly a little high so you can get the better visual.
Yep. Well, I have to admit, it sounds like maybe that person shouldn't be your manager. I don't want to tell you what to do, but, you know,
the worst thing. It's tough running. We're having so tough to get labor. We're having shut down store early because we don't have people. That's how we're hurting.
Yep. So maybe
there might be an opportunity, Joel, if he has other stores with other franchisees anywhere near that is doing it maybe, and I'm using air quotes, the Papa Murphy's way, where you would have multiple make lines open, that they might be able to have you and that manager come and visit and see the success that they're getting by using, you know, standardized tool, you know, standardized procedures.
I have another location where we use both make lines, and we you know, that store was the same problem. It was the manager didn't use it, so we went over there. Just let go all the employees and we hire a whole new crew to change the culture. And now it's working the way we want to have two make line working, specialty pizza, you know, running more cleaner.
I hear you. That's a tough situation to be in, and that's tough to do. I was in that position when I bought our four Des Moines stores. We had like one manager to run all four stores, and it was a mess. They were just poorly operated when we purchased them, so we really had to go through that process. And it's time-consuming, but it's necessary, you know, and you have to start that that rebuilding process and put your standards in place. Having your standards in place and having the store operate the way you want it to operate is far more important than any individual employee that you might have there. If you've got a manager that isn't supporting your vision of how you want your store to operate and the Papa Murphy's procedures, I think you have to figure out how not to make excuses for keeping him. Now I would try to help him change his mind ahead of time, sit down and let him know the gravity of the situation, let him know that this is what I need from a manager. I would like for it to be you, but if it isn't, it's going to be someone else. You know, where you
saw
the picture. Yeah.
Here's my thought process. Yeah, summer's a slow month. So my goal was summer, put that make line in service. So whole summer, they'll get used to that. And then one time we hit the busy time, they will be dialed. Because right now when busy time happens, they lose stuff. They lose tags. Or they're not trained on that make line. And I was thinking maybe summer would be perfect month to get most in the rear make line service and then communicate those cultural value. And they may be better acceptable.
Yeah, that's true.
But they have nothing else. You know, we can focus more on the training part of it.
Yep.
Change the culture. My other fear is, he's been there a long time in California. It's tough to find labor, and I really want to. I'll be honest with you. My fear is if I lose this guy or kick him out, I mean, without the manager, I cannot run that location. It's a multi. Because I work for the fire department full time, so this is my side thing. I have two stores on the side. I depend on them to especially summer months. I'm gone on fire, and that was my fear. How is it? Is that fear true? Because my concern is I may not get a good enough manager out there, and then I could be in a bad situation. That's why I'm really trying to work with this rather than jumping and hiring somebody else.
Right. I think having a fear of not being able to find another person is probably doing more damage than it is good. It's making me more hesitant to maybe address a situation that needs to be addressed and maybe causing you to be a little bit more passive than you need to. What I would do is I would recommend that you decide what needs to happen and then you be assertive in finding a new manager. Sit down with him and have that talk with him. But I would just decide what needs to happen and then just go make sure that it happens, whether it's a new manager or not. Put that above a false idea that you're not going to find anybody. You can find anybody you want if you just look hard enough. There are so many good people out there. You just have to think of it as kind of from an abundance standpoint instead of a scarcity perspective.
Copy. Yeah. I have a Ruby next door. They're gonna have to shut down a store because they can't get employees. That's a situation we're fixing in California. I'm in Berkeley, in California.
Yeah, I got you.
Cost is I have a city next to me. They passed $13 minimum wages, $13, $14 an hour.
Oh wow, that's an extra challenge.
The cities are passing on minimum wages. That's gotcha. The struggle. Yep.
If there's somebody closing down near you, go in and grab their employees.
Oh, I have. I've been walking over to Lucky's and everywhere. I'm like, hey, you want a part-time hour? It's easy work. Come by.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. Sorry I took some time. I sincerely appreciate it.
That's all right. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you, Joel.
Yep, thanks. We're about out of time. We will officially end it. If anybody does want to stick around and chat some more, that's great. But we'll go ahead and officially end the call. And I appreciate it. We'll... Mickey, you and I can maybe chat sometime this week or early next week or whatever and figure out maybe what kind of a plan we can do.
After 4:25, happy to talk with you.
Yeah, right. I got you. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
Thank you.